Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber. On today's show, high school students debate surveillance. You know, Edward Snowden famously said his biggest fear when he leaked information about classified information about the U.S. government's surveillance activities, his biggest fear was that no one would care. And while many in Congress don't seem to care or understand the issue, a breath of fresh air is coming out of our nation's high schools in the form of policy debate. Joining me to discuss this is Jenna McLaughlin, a reporter for The Intercept, who focuses on national security and surveillance. Jenna, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Jenna, a couple months ago, you went to a debate competition, and one of the major focus areas was surveillance. So how are high school students approaching this issue?
Sure. Well, I went to a tournament in Nashville, which was sort of a mid-season tournament in January. So these students actually have been studying the topic of surveillance from pretty much every arena since last summer. The topic for policy debate is traditionally selected by a committee. The year before, it's kind of a vote system, and the students go to summer camps to discuss surveillance. They go crazy with it. So depending on who you talk to, somebody might be thinking about surveillance in terms of how it impacts minority communities. They might be thinking about something as far-reaching as how it impacts drones, technological innovation, nuclear war. They think of every single possibility, and they hone those arguments over the year when they go up against different teams. So you see a really broad range.
And what were some of the biggest takeaways from you having, you know, embedded yourself in this experience?
Sure. Well, I honestly just came away thinking that they were so smart and nuanced and non-judgmental. The entire process for them, I think, at least from what they told me, really made them into very analytical thinkers about the topic so that they could judge it based on statistics, facts, and also their own experiences. So they didn't have just sort of knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah, and you had a feature article detailing your experience. And one of the things I found interesting was that even in the age of where everything's online, and most of these kids that you talk to probably have lived their entire lives online, have constantly been uploading things. There's a digital trail that goes probably back almost to their birth, depending on how old they are. And even then, some of the debaters entered the debate thinking, you know what, I'm not a criminal, I'm not a terrorist, I have nothing to hide. And one student in particular changed her mind going through this experience.
Right, definitely. You kind of start the debate, especially as a young person, thinking, you know, your right to privacy almost doesn't really exist anymore. That's not something that younger generations really even think about. But once they start studying these kinds of things and understand the way that not only the government can access information, but also criminals, they start to think about how their own lives could be interpreted to others or information stolen. So you start understanding also how it could impact other people. Just because you might not think you have anything to hide, it doesn't mean that an activist in Syria doesn't have anything to hide, or a journalist in the US who's just trying to protect their source. So the kids sort of broaden their worldview that way.
Yeah, and there's a stark contrast between the level of nuance that you saw and what we see in Congress. And just last week, there was a hearing about Section 702 of the FISA Amendments Act. Now, this is a foreign surveillance authority, but naturally, the internet is a global entity, and Americans' data are often stored overseas. We communicate with foreigners, so just because it's a foreign surveillance program doesn't mean Americans' data are not swept up indiscriminately in mass quantities. Now, of course, the whole discussion in Congress was about that. It was about whether Americans' data were improperly being handled. But I noticed, other than one tiny mention, not a lot of talk about how it impacts foreigners, who are most of the customers of American tech companies, at least Apple, 2/3 of its business is overseas. Not a lot of mention about drones. Not a lot of mention about how it impacts minorities, particularly Muslim Americans. Did you see just a big gulf between what you have experienced as a reporter covering these issues and what a bunch of 14 to 18 year olds are talking about?
Absolutely. I mean, I was also listening in on that hearing, and you sort of hear the same questions repeated over and over again. But when you're at these debates, which are sometimes hours long, the students sort of get to pick specific topics that they think will argue their point the strongest, and they're assigned a side during the debate, so they don't get to pick whether or not they want to advocate for surveillance or go against it. But when they're advocating for eliminating surveillance, one team, actually the team that was the feature of my article, Lena and Faith, two girls basically focused on 702 surveillance. And a big part of their argument was about foreign competition and the need for innovation and protecting technology companies. Not only that, but they included news articles about Congress's emails being spied on. They were right on top of every new breaking thing. And it was really incredible to see.
Yeah, and I've often wondered whether it's really a generational problem, because of course you can be as early an internet adopter as you want to claim, but if you haven't lived your entire life online and you haven't had a Facebook account since you were a child, or even my online experience, there is a certain part of my life that wasn't lived online. And there are people who are never going to have that dichotomy between the life you lived online and the life you lived offline. It's all online. And I've often wondered if that's why it's so hard for congressmen and senators to grapple with this issue. The stakes for them are just not that high. You know, if their work email gets hacked, fine. You know, they deal with that. But it's not like everything about them is just in the cloud. In your view, do you see the generational problem when you go to these debates? Do students talk about how much of their life is lived online and how it matters a lot more to them than maybe someone who's, you know, 80 years old?
Absolutely. And I think that the students, some of them at least, started to be more restrictive about what they would post on their social media accounts. They said, now I've become a lot more careful. You know, I put a camera over, or a sticker over my camera on my laptop. I make sure not to post too much personally identifying information, phone numbers, things like that. But I also think that there's a sense of sort of being defeated about that. There's already so much, and other people post about you, and you don't really have an option when they do something like that. You know, someone sends a picture to Facebook of you at a party that you didn't ask them to do, and it'll always be there. Even if you delete it, someone will be able to find it. So I think that they almost feel like that right has sort of been given up, and they need to trace their way back from that.
Yeah. And a government official might look at that and say, well, great, young people have realized that privacy is dead, and now they're being more judicious and smarter about what they post online. Great. Young people are being more responsible. They're learning that they shouldn't just post things online. That's one way of looking at it. But then there's the other way of saying, this has already created a chilling effect on free expression. We want people to post online. The business model of the internet is actually based on that. And there's a lot of controversy about private data collection by companies. But if you look at Google and Facebook, they're in the ad business, and they want people to feel free to talk about their lives and express themselves. And it's really unfortunate that already these kids are already jaded and cynical, and I can't blame them, because they have lived this their entire life in the surveillance state, and they haven't seen much reform. We've had modest reform, not much reform. And now they feel like they can't use the internet in the way that they want. They have to second guess themselves and check their speech. And that's really unfortunate. And maybe that's something that the government doesn't understand.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's something that Snowden talked about a lot after his disclosures, is that he spent a lot of his young life being anonymous online. And it was a big part of his experience as a maturing person. He was able to develop ideas, talk to different people across the globe who were different than him, who sort of nurtured him in that way. So I think that that's absolutely the case. Congressman might be able to say, you know, that wasn't necessarily my experience, but they don't really fully understand the idea that this is the way that we reach people today. This is how we communicate today. And if you can't do that in a way that feels open and secure, then it you won't say everything that you might think you should just let out.
And speaking of the gap between the high school students you observed and the Congress, recently they kind of took the show on the road to DC. So back in March, you went to Nashville for the competition, but today you've got a piece out in The Intercept talking about a demo that some of the students did for Capitol Hill. So tell us how that went.
Right. It was really great. It was so good to see those students. And some of those students I had interviewed early in sort of my reporting process, and I didn't actually get to include them in my first piece. So it was really great to be able to do that today. And the fact that the students came from California, Georgia, Florida, across the country, really, to get here to DC. Some of them didn't even have a coach. Their programs were so small. But Stefan Bouchard, who is the coach that came up with the original topic, along with Nathan White at Access Now, just decided that they were going to get this whole thing together. The House Judiciary gave them the space. and they did three exhibition debates. One of them was about the central topic of surveillance and whether or not the U.S. government should curtail its domestic surveillance. The second topic was about whether or not Congress should pass Senator Burr and Senator Feinstein's bill about encryption. And the third was about whether or not the FBI should limit its use of informants in Muslim American communities. And it was incredible just to see the wide range of students that debated on these issues. There were Muslim students present, students that are impacted by these issues, students talking about encryption and 0 days at a level that definitely very few people in Congress understand, if any of them. So it was really wonderful to see.
And what's the reception been? I mean, do you think that something like this, where congressmen see their future voters, you know, their constituents, some of them are probably either already of eligible age to vote, seeing them debate the issue and covering a wider range of issues than they even thought were relevant to the surveillance debate, did this particular instance have a positive impact? Do you see this having a positive impact going forward?
I think so, absolutely. A lot of the students actually had the chance to meet with their representatives afterwards. They met with a few senators and different congressmen and actually spoke with them, had conversations, were in their offices. And some of the staff members were also there for the actual debates. I know at least a few were in the audience, and someone mentioned to me that they had to leave a little bit early to go to an encryption working group. So they were heading straight from students talking about encryption to the actual people who are making decisions about encryption. And you can't help but think that there was some sort of learning going on there, you know, at least from them just seeing what people are thinking about it.
Yeah, and just seeing that the next generation probably approaches this issue set very differently than traditional voters, which are much older. And
Right. We
often talk about one of the problems with young people is that they don't vote. So they're happy to go on Twitter and complain about stuff. But then when it comes time to vote, you could ask Bernie Sanders about this. It seems like they're not there. But hopefully their engagement in the issue will convince their representatives that, yes, this will be my constituency someday. And it's going to be a very different constituency than those who signed up for their first email account when they were already full-fledged adults with fully developed careers.
Absolutely, for sure.
So I guess going forward, having experienced all of these high school students and all of the arguments that I've made, what are really some of the arguments and points that were raised that really stood out to you that you think representatives in Congress, those in the intelligence community, should take note of?
Well, I think they should definitely take note of just every unique opinion that these students had. I mean, there wasn't kind of a cohesive one point in any of it. Although I guess the main takeaway is that people found it hard to defend massive government surveillance. So I guess that's the key takeaway. But if you speak to two students that I spoke with who actually ended up, I think, coming in second in the final tournament of the entire thing, they argue in a style that is more about talking about racism in the government and how, if we are ever going to reform these programs in the first place, we need to talk about how the system is inherently racist and targets minorities especially. So I think that that's definitely something that needs to be considered more down the line. Just those sorts of things are really nuanced, and there's so much material for Congress to learn from.
Yeah, and my biggest takeaway from your article was just the lack of scrutiny on the claims that are made in the media and, you know, intelligence officials who just want, you know, collect it all, you know, full surveillance. They'll just go on TV and say things like, yes, this was an important program, and yes, this stopped a terrorist attack, and no one's there to fact check them. And in contrast, these debaters, not only are they talking like a mile a minute, and it's like really hard for non-debaters to even keep up, there's kind of a cult around this practice, but they are, you know, looking at these things legally, they're scrutinizing them. They're saying, you know, actually we delved into the data and there, you know, was no purpose to this program, or this surveillance didn't do anything. So there's a big takeaway from media that maybe they should be applying the same level of scrutiny to the intelligence community, to the FBI, claims made about encryption by senators like Burr and Feinstein, that these students do. And they could really learn a thing or two about fact checking from watching these debates.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's definitely the model that The Intercept hopes to stand by, too. So we enjoyed hearing those fact-checking claims.
Well, that's it for today's show. My guest has been Jenna McLaughlin, Intercept reporter who covers surveillance and national security. Jenna, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks so much.
Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Let us know what you think of the show. If there are guests you want to hear, topics you want discussed more, send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. We always appreciate your feedback. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. And thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.